CFO Radio is the only radio show that explores the passion of today's CFO and examines the innermost thoughts of the financial world, financial perspectives of tomorrow. Well, welcome to CFO Radio. I'm Lorraine Chilvers.
And I'm Brian Kaufman. I'll be producing the show today, and I'd like to thank our sponsors before we begin. Delaney Consulting, LLC, providing financial leadership to fast-growing companies, interim management, and executive placement for the finance function. Visit DelaneyLLC.com and learn why 100% of their clients describe Delaney's services as outstanding and excellent. Also, National Association of Corporate Directors, an association created for directors by directors, whose mission is to advance exemplary board leadership. We are sponsored by the Atlanta chapter.
And in this week's CFO Radio News, we have an article originally published by Nonprofit Finance Fund, who goes by the acronym NFF. Well, the Nonprofit Finance Fund 2012 survey is entitled, After Year of Adaptation, Fundamental Challenges Remain. And 60% of human service organizations cannot meet the 2012 demand, is what it said. The NFF Chief Executive Officer Anthony Bug Levine stated, we must make systematic changes to the way we address social problems. And we're bringing this article to you today because on our monthly checklist of having a nonprofit chief financial officer or head of finance, we have today a treasurer from a nonprofit, and so hence the news article. Well, the 2012 survey, generously supported by the Bank of America Charitable Foundation, it states in New York, April 2012, the NFF today released the results of its 2012 State of the Nonprofit Sector Survey. More than 4,500 respondents at nonprofits across the country in the United States shared the details of how they are adapting their organizations and finances to current economic conditions. The survey, which was supported for the second year in a row by the Bank of America Charitable Foundation, reveals that while 2011 was a year of significant organizational and programmatic changes, many nonprofits are still facing fundamental challenges that threaten the stability of the sector and the well-being of the people they serve. Over the past 3 years, the length of stays at our shelter has increased from 11 to 27 and 33 nights because of the lack of affordable housing, says Sarah Lange, Director of Fund Development and External Relations for Abby's House, which provides shelter housing and advocacy to homeless women and children across Massachusetts. We're scrambling to come up with creative solutions to shelter women for whom we have no room, she says. Economic recovery is still not a reality here. And the article goes on to say some statistics, and some of these are quite alarming. 85% of nonprofits experienced an increase in demand for services in 2011. Excuse me. This is on top of years' increased demand. Previous NFF surveys found that 77% of nonprofits experienced demand in 2010, and prior year 71%, prior year to that in 2008, 73%. 88% expect an increase in demand for services in 2012. 57% have less or equal to 3 months cash on hand. 87% said their financial outlook won't get any better in 2012. Well, nonprofits are adapting to continued economic pressure in all sorts of creative and substantive ways. But for many, these are stopgap measures that won't make up for the bigger forces at play, decreasing government support, the unwillingness of some private foundations to evolve funding practices, and a lack of necessary support from some boards, said Anthony Bug Levine, CEO of Nonprofit Finance Fund. We must rethink the way we find solutions to our most pressing social problems. Well, responses from human service organizations, which form the backbone of our social safety net, reveal that reductions and delays in government funding are of paramount concern and threaten the services provided to the nonprofits for the vulnerable populations. Statistics show that 58% of human services will be unable to meet demand in 2011. Sorry, were unable to meet demand in 2011. 60% won't be able to meet demand in 2012. 56% of human services respondents received federal government funding or contracts, 69% receive state or local funding. 52% reported late payments from the federal government. 62% said state or local government payments were late. And 65% or more of human service nonprofits receiving late federal, state, or local governments used reserves to cover the gap. So they're dipping into the savings tap. Well, we're reducing services and changing our business model to compensate for the decline in government funding, said Daryl Evey, Executive Director of Family Assistance Program in California. There were bright spots that have been highlighted by the report as nonprofits dig deep to serve constituents and maintain employment. 55% of survey respondents added or expanded programs. 52% increased the number of populations served. 50% hired new positions. And while 23% of respondents cut staff in 2011, just 10% expect to do so in 2012. Nonprofits are an engine of the economy, providing critical services to people in need and providing employment to millions of Americans, said Kerry Sullivan, president of the Bank of America Charitable Foundation. The changing funding landscape requires greater collaboration between government, private foundations, and nonprofits in order to ensure that critical services remain in place and that the nonprofit sector remains a vibrant contributor to our country's economic health. Well, this year's survey underlined the need for a more open conversation among funders, boards, and nonprofits. Just one out of five nonprofits feels comfortable talking with their funders about cash flow concerns. Only 6% feel comfortable talking with funders about debt. 73% say their boards don't do enough to leverage their relationships to support fundraising. And 38% report that their boards aren't able to sufficiently understand and communicate their expense drivers. Well, said Bug Levine, year after year, our survey finds nonprofits and many of the people they serve are in dire straits. Many people believe the crisis is over, but our social safety net is still in peril, he believes. Nonprofits dipped into reserves late last year to tide themselves over, but expect 2012 to be even worse. Government, funders, boards, and nonprofits need to work more collaboratively to ensure that crucial services can be delivered and secure a true economic recovery. Well, that is a very significant backdrop of a news article for us today as we bring to our guest for today's show, Keith Sherbert. I'm very pleased to have Keith as our guest today. Keith is a partner in KPMG's Atlanta office, and he specializes in audits of not-for-profit organizations, institutions of higher education, and healthcare providers. Keith began his career with KPMG in 1992, admitted to the partnership in 2006. During his tenure with KPMG, Keith has served on many of the firm's most significant clients in the Atlanta market. In addition to his client service responsibilities, he's also served as one of the firm's sampling methodology specialists and as an instructor to the firm's single audit methodology. We're going to talk today to Keith regarding his role as treasurer of Partnership Against Domestic Violence. Now, separate from this, Keith is also treasurer of Georgia Independent College Association and is a board member of the Girl Scouts of Greater Atlanta. Keith has a BBA degree in accounting from the University of Georgia, and he is a certified public accountant. Well, my goodness, welcome to the show, Keith.
Thank you, Lorraine. It's great to be here.
Well, Keith, let's start at the beginning. We always start with a fun question. Whether you were out selling frogs on the stand or selling lemonade, delivering newspapers, let's start at the beginning of your career. What was your first job, whether paid or otherwise?
Well, it was nothing that interesting, certainly, but my first paid job was at a local drugstore in my hometown where I grew up. And it wasn't chain. It was a local drugstore, and learned a lot there about serving customers, about doing the right thing. Customer service isn't something that you would think an auditor would need to know a lot about, but those are skills that I use every day and look back on those days fondly. I will say that the pharmacist that I worked for actually became a trustee of the college that he went to school, where he's an alum, which was one of our audit clients at the time. So 25 years later, he was my boss again. So
oh, now that's
it always
a full
comes
circle.
Back around.
You know what? They say that the town that you live in is a small place no matter where you live.
That's right.
There you go. That's proof.
Right.
Well, how did you get from the pharmacy to here today as a partner with a significant size firm?
Yeah, well, kind of interesting. At the drugstore, I go back to that. What they let the teenagers, as they called us, do was close the books every night and to clean out the cash register and then post the revenue and the like. So, and I took an accounting class in high school, and that gave me sort of the inclination, well, maybe accounting is the place for me. So I focused on that in school, graduated from University of Georgia, as you mentioned, and started with KPMG in Atlanta in the audit practice, and there I remain. And so really grew up in the practice serving not-for-profits, higher ed. That's not the sector that I thought I would be working in when I was in school, because you just don't hear that much about it. But KPMG has a very good client base there, built some expertise, and it's really been great for my career.
Well, that's fabulous. And it brings you to be the serve on the board of some great organizations, one of which we're going to focus on today. You have two roles, first as partner of KPMG, and the role that we're going to expand upon today as treasurer of Partnership Against Domestic Violence. Well, Keith, can you begin today's discussion by giving us a background to PADV?
Yeah, I'd be happy to. And I'll just give some basic facts that I'm sure your listeners will find interesting, but also shocking about domestic violence. And it is a crime. We call it the crime of domestic violence. A lot of times you hear on the news a domestic situation and we sort of suppress that, but certainly those are very important crimes, and PADV is a critical factor in combating those. But just generally about domestic violence, 1 in 4 women will be a domestic violence victim in their lifetime, 1 in 4. And that statistic comes from the CDC domestic violence sexual assault publication from December 2011. It could be your sister, your aunt, your best friend, the person sitting next to you in the cube right now, your best customer. It could be anyone, and that's really opened my eyes. At KPMG, we have a women's affinity network, and we oftentimes will have domestic violence panels. And every time we do that, someone comes up to me that I know and tells me they're a domestic violence victim, knows a domestic violence victim, and you know, thanks us for the work we're doing. So it does impact everyone, but it is the crime that's in the shadows. Specifically, Georgia ranks number 6 in the nation in the number of women killed by men related to domestic violence. So for anyone living in Georgia, that is certainly a shocking statistic there. Now on to PADV. PADV, Partnership Against Domestic Violence, it's a 501c tax-exempt organization which operates the only certified domestic violence shelter in the city of Atlanta and in Gwinnett County. We serve over 18,000 women and children annually, and half of those served are children. Every dime raised stays right here in Metro Atlanta, as PADV serves the 27-county Metro Atlanta area. And in addition to the shelters, PADV also provides both preventative and intervention services. An example of a prevention service, we have a 6-week in-school curriculum to address teen dating violence and healthy relationships. So we try to hit it head-on early on. We also have an annual teen summit and our domestic violence in the workplace conference, which the next one is slated for October 10th, 2012, at the Home Depot. Thank you, Home Depot. Corporate offices are one of our great supporters here in Atlanta. And as far as intervention services, we do have a 24-hour crisis line, legal advocacy services, community outreach, and of course the 2 emergency safe houses that I mentioned earlier.
And it's amazing to me that in just the organization, as I know, 18,000 people that you've supported and helped. When you think of Atlanta as being a relatively small but, you know, modern, large,
right,
I guess, city, 18,000, and we're probably not even scratching the surface.
Yeah, if you think of 1 in 4 are victims, and 18,000 sounds like a big number, and it is for a small not-for-profit, our budget is just under $3 million, but doing a lot with that $3 million, but really only scratching the surface as far as combating the problem that we're trying to find solutions to.
And for purposes of transparency for the listeners on the radio show, I want to let people know that I also serve on the board of PADV, and I've volunteered for over 10 years to PADV. So if it would appear that I know some stats and so forth, that's where it's coming from. I've seen the women in the shelter, I've seen the children, and boy, they're packed in tight sometimes. You have a new capital campaign. You're looking to raise over $4 million.
Correct.
We'll get a little bit to some of that further down the road in the conversation. And we will talk about some nonprofits from a larger, more broader perspective. But just as a starting point, if there are any listeners that would like to assist, learn more about domestic violence, volunteer, or maybe even donate or help in that fundraising campaign, you can go to padv.org, Partnership Against Domestic Violence, the PADV in initials, padv.org. And we'll say that again at the end of the show. Well, let's get to some of the issues that are facing not only PADV and also other nonprofits. A news article talked about the issues that many are facing from a financing and fundraising perspective. What are the three or four, what you might call hot topics, that are facing not-for-profit organizations today?
Well, the first one I think of is, in that article hit it head on, is surviving in the current economic environment, particularly not-for-profits are getting squeezed from all sides. Number one, volumes are up, unfortunately, particularly in a domestic violence situation.
Does that tend to increase in times of economic hardship?
Absolutely. The need greatly increases because there's much more stress on the family, and some of these suppressed actions may emerge as part of the stress that the economy is inflicting on a family. So certainly the need is up. But organizations and individuals have less support to provide in an economic downturn. Governments have less support to provide because tax bases are down. Governmental revenues are down. So grants are harder to come by. And then a lot of times the frequency of payments or the speed of payments is significantly decelerated.
We saw in the article earlier that I think there was 50 and 60 something percent of state, local, and federal government payments being late.
Yeah, we've seen that at PADV, and other not-for-profits that I serve as a service provider have seen that as well. So that is an issue that's been going on for a couple of years now. And the not-for-profits don't have a lot of levers to pull. I mean, can't raise your prices, right?
Sure.
You can increase your fundraising efforts, but that is what it is. And you certainly have a need that you don't want to pull back your program. So,
are you having to do that? Are you having to pull back programs? Are you seeing that in the nonprofit community?
We have seen that. We have seen that. So, not-for-profits are, and some of it may be a positive, they're looking at their core programs and making sure that they're covering those, and anything that someone else may be doing, maybe meeting that need in another organization or another government program is serving that need, or they can collaborate with another not-for-profit and handling it that way and focusing on what the critical core need they're serving is.
And my knowledge of domestic violence, I may be quoting the statistics a little bit poorly because I'm going off memory, but typically, in a domestic violence situation, the victim, let's say in this particular, there sometimes a man is a victim of domestic violence, and we need to make sure that the audience knows that. But primarily, it is women, and very often children. Very often, they've had domestic violence happen 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 times before they decide to leave.
Right,
and so this can become not only a family situation, but it can become a workplace situation. And you mentioned earlier the workplace community involvement that PADV is doing. help educate the audience. Essentially, the audience today are people in the workforce. Mm-hmm. So help them understand some elements about that, if you could.
Okay. Well, certainly, I think I mentioned this earlier, it's kind of a, not a tagline, but something we say. Domestic violence is the crime that occurs in the shadows that no one, including the victim, really wants to talk about and identify with. So it does happen a number of times generally until a victim looks for help. And by the time the victim looks for help, it's generally a very desperate situation because the first time it comes out of the blue, it's something they never expect to happen to them. And it's like a different person they're living with.
And the statistics from PADV that I've seen show that, and again, I forget whether it's slightly under or slightly over, but it's around about two-thirds of domestic violence victims are actually employees. Right. They are gainfully employed. And so, you know, if they come in battered and bruised and shaken about and that's been their day or their night or their weekend.
That's right. So they've been in this situation and they keep their daily routine because they just want it to go away, right? And so they keep coming to work, and it manifests itself there. And you know, not only are you trying to keep a safe workplace for your other employees, you want to help this domestic violence victim. So a lot of HR directors are looking for ways to help identify domestic violence victims. I mean, it could be a fall off in productivity. It could be coming in late. It could be visible signs of abuse.
And what I've had in the past has been the aggressor, the husband in this case, came to the workplace to continue the violence for actually my employee.
Yeah, a number of unfortunate cases here in Atlanta and across the country. You can Google that and you'll find pages and pages of those types of situations. So it is real. Mm. And a lot of employers who are on the forefront have identified that as an issue that they are dealing with.
Sure. Well, in terms of looking at these hot topics, clearly financing and the cash flow is a very significant part. Are there other hot topics that you think are pressing for the nonprofits?
I think in general, and now I'm talking about maybe the larger not-for-profits, is reputational risk. That is a big issue that not-for-profits deal with. Aside from their, or maybe right along with their tax-exempt status, their reputation is probably their most valuable asset that's not on their balance sheet. Just to illustrate, if you hear something about Walmart and their business practices or the stewardship of their company, you're going to pay attention, but you're probably not going to stop going to Walmart if that's part of your routine and if that's something that you're generally used to doing. If you hear something negative about a not-for-profit and how they're stewarding their resources, you're going to think twice about writing a check. It's a lot easier not to write a check.
And donors do think in that manner.
Absolutely. So you think about the regulator for not-for-profits is the IRS. And there's been a lot out there about not-for-profits earning their exempt status, so to speak, particularly in the healthcare industry, about serving the indigent, the uninsured, the underinsured, and how do you measure that, and how do you articulate that you're meeting that need. Another unfortunate thing I've seen from some of the larger not-for-profits is a lot of talk about executive compensation, maybe offshore investments that certain U.S. senators have highlighted for certain not-for-profits. And the unfortunate thing is you hear the big splash, you hear the accusation, and then most not-for-profits have a good story to tell around why they're doing what they're doing and the results that have occurred because of the decisions they've made around executive comp and where they invest their money. But you don't hear the reply, you just remember the splash because the letter that gets sent back is not in the newspaper. So
it's more sexy to talk about issues than resolution.
Yes. So it's definitely hard to get to articulate your story and get it back out in front of the public. So certainly that's why reputation risk is something that is at the forefront of not just management, but governance of all not-for-profits.
So what are the other, are there other hot topics?
I think you mentioned it, the war for talent. Or maybe we were talking about that earlier.
Yes, yeah.
But particularly, you know, not-for-profits have limited resources. So to get the good talent to manage the organization, it's important to find someone who is either committed to the cause or will be committed to the cause.
And a lot of people volunteer.
Great volunteers. We couldn't do it without the volunteers. We have such a great staff and such great volunteers. But you need staff to manage and deploy those volunteers. And so it's very important to get the right talent. Turnover is an issue, particularly in an economic downturn. When the uptick happens and the job market opens up in the commercial industries, the not-for-profits are going to lag behind as far as being able to, you know, raise salaries or provide benefits that maybe they cut out during the economic downturn. And you can only hold off for so long and keep the talent that you need.
Sure. And then it's going to be even tighter. Well, what are the impacts of these on the organizations? We've talked about cash flow. We've talked about reputational risk. Certainly the war on talent and the fact that turnover is an issue. How does that impact the nonprofit?
Well, it's like any other commercial concern. You just manage through it and look for help. One of the big things that not-for-profits have been doing in the downturn, it's been difficult to expand your donor base because in a downturn, there's, like I said earlier, there's limited philanthropic help out there. People are generally going to pull back, but they're going to continue to give to those organizations that they're invested in. So it's important to make sure your donor base is a loyal donor base. And they're going to stick with you during a downturn. And so that's something I think PADV in particular has been very, very successful at.
And I'd like to give a shout out to Megan Fulmer, who is the executive director of PADV. She has a very significant role with those key donors. And that is something where, again, from a reputational risk perspective, you have government grants and the liaison for that. Essentially, it's a piece of paper and it's an RFP submission, and you cross your fingers and you hope that your grant is not going to be cut back or pulled completely. That essentially is an administration exercise,
right?
And that's got to be done. It's got to be done well and efficiently. From a secondary perspective, corporate donors. And third, and not necessarily last, because some organizations that are nonprofit, this is their key source, is the private individual donor. Mm-hmm. And thankfully, today in the United States, we still have the tax relief for the donation, assuming that the organization has that nonprofit status of, as a charitable organization. Talk to us a little bit about the different aspects of these. Are you seeing different elements of the government and then the corporate and then the individual donor, or are all of them squeezed?
I think they're all squeezed at the moment. I think the corporate donations are coming back. Government's going to lag, and then, you know, the personal is going to follow all that. But the key and the common element around soliciting from the broader donor base is to make sure that you're relevant as a not-for-profit, that you're serving a critical need in the community, and that you can articulate your relevance. We've seen you can't just ask for money anymore just because you're a nonprofit. 10 or 15 years ago, that's how you fundraise. You know, we're not-for-profit, we're doing this. You have to prove that you're a worthy recipient of the donations. And a good example of that is the United Way. They have streamlined the application process and the allocation process to align where they're sending funding to community needs. And there have been winners and losers in that process all across the country, because you really have to articulate your relevance to what the perceived need in the community is. The good thing about PADV, we have a good story to tell, but it's a tough story to hear. Mm. It really is. And just to contrast it with, throughout American Cancer Society. That's a great organization. We rally around cancer survivors, but we don't really rally around domestic violence survivors. One reason, because domestic violence survivors don't want to be rallied around. They want to move on and forget. And so you sort of have this innocuous victim out there, even though we've all said we know these victims, we don't know who they are, but we're all impacted by it. We just don't know exactly how, but the statistics tell us that we are.
Sure, sure. And that is a challenge, I think, for the organization and the mission in terms of what it supports. Mm-hmm. Well, are there key aspects of accounting for nonprofits that differ from the for-profit world?
Yes, there are. And if you look at I'm sure people just turned us off when we said accounting. the financial statements of a not-for-profit have been reformed over the last, it's been a while now, 15 years or so, to look more like a commercial entity. So if you're used to looking at commercial financials, you'll see some similarities. But what you'll find is you'll see categorizations of the equity or net assets of a not-for-profit into what's restricted and what's not restricted. So that's kind of the key difference.
Talk a little bit about that. What does it mean?
Okay. A restricted net asset is an asset that comes in that a donor has restricted for a certain purpose or for a certain time frame. So it may be restricted for use at a certain shelter or used for scholarships in a higher ed environment. So there is some particular use, and then it could be permanently restricted for endowment. So, and everything else is unrestricted. So when you look at the liquidity of a not-for-profit, you're really focused on what that unrestricted reserve is. And so that is a key difference relative to your regular commercial set of financial statements and the underlying accounting.
And in terms of the accounting, you've got to keep those sources and outflows of income and cash totally separate.
That's right. That's right.
And I think the struggle for a lot of nonprofits is because they often do a campaign. We talked about PADV mm-hmm. having a capital campaign. Mm-hmm. When you fundraise for the capital campaign, there's going to be a new shelter built in Gwinnett County. Mm-hmm. And the money raised can't be used to spend on admin or payroll or other
right.
operating costs. It can't be used for the second shelter. And so in that regard, a for-profit company really doesn't have to think about streamlines of this portion of cash can only, it came from this division, it can only be spent on this division. In fact, quite the converse.
Right.
For-profit companies, typical companies, they have the benefit of pooled resources. Mm-hmm. And if one division over here is struggling, you dip into the cash flow from this other division. And very often that becomes the investment in the poorer division.
Right.
And you've got to make a business decision strategically as to whether all those divisional units or products and so forth, mm-hmm. are technology and so forth, are they viable?
Correct. It comes down to who the stakeholders are and what, because in a for-profit, your goal is shareholder value.
Sure.
And however that happens, you make it happen.
Right.
And there aren't as many collars around what you can do within the operations of your business.
I often think that the nonprofit has a much tougher world. I mean, can you imagine if the likes of these significant companies, you mentioned Walmart, Coca-Cola, General Electric, these substantial organizations, if they had to put their tax return as being a public record, and
right.
let's face it, that is yep. the financial statements
right.
typically for the nonprofit.
Mm-hmm.
In the modern world, most recently, we've seen a lot of nonprofits create an annual report, very similar. It's often focused around the programs that are in place and the money that is spent,
mm-hmm.
and a thank you to the donors.
Right.
But at the same time, it's a marketing document, but it's now being released.
Mm-hmm.
But the for-profit world doesn't have to put their tax return
That's
out.
Right. That's right. And it goes back to stakeholders. There's a much broader base of stakeholders for not-for-profit. In PADV's case, it's the victims, those you're serving, whatever your not-for-profit goals are. It's your donors, It's the community that you're serving at large. And so you're much more of a steward of resources in the not-for-profit world than, you know, operationally trying to drive shareholder value. So there are a lot of complexities in that type of dynamic that not-for-profits deal with every day.
Sure. Well, let's step back and ask perhaps a broad question. What do nonprofits need to survive and thrive in today's economic environment?
Talked a bit about being relevant. I think that's first on the list. Make sure you're not getting lost in the shuffle in the very competitive landscape. A good example of articulating your relevance, I'll mention a local not-for-profit, Grady Hospital. Those in Atlanta know what I'm talking about, but just for the other listeners, Grady is a safety net hospital in Atlanta, and what that means is they serve the uninsured, the underinsured, the indigent population, and their funding sources are very uncertain. They get governmental funding, but not a lot from patients. But
they have one of the best heart healthcare departments in the United States.
And 5 or 6 years ago, nobody knew that, and right. Nobody knew that they were the only trauma one
in the Southeast.
In North Georgia, okay. in the state, I believe. And what that means is, if you have a gunshot wound, or if you're in a catastrophic car accident, you go to Grady. And the community at large thought Grady was where the indigent population went to get health care in the emergency room. But 5 or 6 years ago, Grady was about to close their doors. And their tagline was, Atlanta can't live without Grady, which sounds the kind of innocuous kind of, you know, oh, I can't live without you, whatever. But no, people would die if Grady closed their doors, because you can't just move a trauma one center down the street. It takes some time.
And I've also heard from an economic city financing perspective and population and community wealth that we wouldn't have got the Olympics if we didn't have a trauma one.
Correct.
We wouldn't have had many of the ball games and the sports activities, right. And the conventions that bring millions of people to the city and the state.
Yeah. So that organization was serving that need, but not articulating that they were serving that need, or that they were really helping the economic engine of the city. I didn't think about some of the things you brought up, but yes, you're exactly right. And so since then, and they're, you know, they will always be challenged given their safety net status financially, but certainly are doing a much better job with the ideas we're talking about.
So one of the challenges that I think that you've talked about in terms of nonprofits surviving and thriving, let's take it back. The CFO network, we want to talk about finances and so forth. Let's talk not only about the balance sheet, but more specifically financing. The challenge for a lot of companies today is, how do you get through the tough times? And mm-hmm. You've talked, the article on the news earlier talked about the challenge of finance and cash flow. Is financing readily available to nonprofits today? And I'm going to throw a couple of thoughts out there, some of which may be a little bit on the edge. Financing is available to for-profit companies through government grants such as the SBA, Small Business Administration. A lot of the nonprofits in the world today are actually pretty small and locally mm-hmm. oriented. Are there similar programs from the government available to the nonprofit community? And if a private individual were to lend money to a nonprofit, is that tax allowable, the loan?
Well, on the latter, no, that's not tax allowable.
And I asked that because I thought I knew the answer.
And a
donation would be.
Absolutely. But you don't see a lot of private lending, and a lot of not-for-profits have policies against that for good reasons, I'm sure. But as far as small business loans and government loans, there are those types of financings available, but they're few and far between for most not-for-profits. They're generally specific to a certain need or a certain type of spending. The larger not-for-profits, there is more financing available to them as far as tax-exempt bonds. So a lot of your colleges, universities, a lot of your governments, larger hospitals and larger not-for-profits have that available, but not so much for the smaller not-for-profits. I've seen operating lines of credit, and those are generally intended just to fill in a gap between when funds are expended and when reimbursements are expected from a government funder or from a fundraising campaign. So,
but that's a high risk for a bank because of, you know, the for-profit world, you tend to have customers that are loyal. Mm-hmm. Donors that are loyal can have all the loyalty in the world, but if they just got laid off.
Correct. And that, yeah, that is, the banks ask for a lot more information than they used to when providing a line of credit or any kind of financing. The other financing that you see is what we mentioned earlier, the capital campaigns. That sort of takes the place of bank debt or issuing stock, which not-for-profit doesn't have the availability there, but that is, you can think of it as, it's not something you pay back, but it is sort of, you think of it as fund, as financing for a particular, using the proceeds for a particular purpose. And, you know, Gwinnett County's been very good to us, has really embraced that campaign for PADV, and it's just been really successful so far.
That's fabulous. That is fabulous. So how does a nonprofit organization raise finance when it needs it? And I ask this question with a little bit of a barb in it, that very often my experience has found, whether it's a for-profit or a not-for-profit, companies and organizations tend to go to the financing institution, the lender, the bank, when they need it. And the reality is you need to have arranged that when times are good and cash is in the bank.
That's right.
So now put it into a nonprofit arena, the small nonprofits in particular. What do? They go knock on the bank's door and...
Well, you start with the banks you have relationships with, where your checking account is. And that's usually successful. I mean, they know who you are, and they know the principles involved. The other is to leverage your board and leverage those relationships and have a board member or two help you articulate, number one, the need, and number two, the ability to handle any kind of financing. So, you know, there are a few levers you can use, but certainly it's no different than any other banking relationship. You want to go in with an existing relationship.
Sure.
And that's where we've been successful. Sure. As far as gaining financing.
Sure. Well, how does the nonprofit role for the CFO differ from the for-profit in a commercial industry? Is the role of the CFO different?
It is, and I'll tell you what I think the differentiator is. As diverse as the competencies of a commercial CFO have to be, you feel like you're wearing a lot of hats. For a not-for-profit CFO, it's no different, and maybe even accelerated a little bit, because particularly with your midsize and smaller not-for-profits, you just don't have the base of resources in-house that you do at a larger entity. The CFO is not only the chief financial officer, but the chief legal officer, oftentimes dealing with any kind of legal issues that come up, whether they be lawsuits or dealing with financing and reading documents and those types of things. Maybe the chief IT officer as well. Maybe the chief development officer, or certainly have a lot of purview over the fundraising process, where at a large organization there may be more of a team built out. It's all not due to competencies, but just due to resourcing.
And you think of that as with the CFO being the head of sales?
Yeah.
Doesn't often happen in the for-profit world, right?
That's right. So,
in fact, those two departments are very often very distinct, very separate.
That's correct. So there are, you know, a lot of hats that you wear, a lot of conflicts that you have to resolve, you know, within the operations of the entity. So, you know, I think just the diversity of skill set that you need is the same, and it's also different, because you just don't have the team underneath you generally, or the numbers of folks underneath you to be able to be more of an oversight. It's really, you're generally getting more down into the weeds, if you will, in all these areas than you would otherwise.
Sure. And one of the pieces of advice that I give when finance people come to me and ask for support when they're out of work, that is the perfect time to help volunteer, whether it's an organization that you've worked with before or you may not have worked with an organization. Go find out something that is your passion and right. go contact them, because they need help.
Yeah, that's great advice. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, let's talk about, you're in a little bit of a hybrid role. You're the treasurer, and PADV does have a finance staff. Mm-hmm. So what is the role of the treasurer? You serve on the board. Mm-hmm. What is that role? What are the expectations typically of that treasurer when you serve on the board? But you've got a day job and you're volunteering.
That's right. Well, we have great finance staff at PADV. So really my role is oversight of the treasury function. So we have a finance staff that I meet with. The finance committee meets with the finance staff. I'm consulted on large decisions, not the day-to-day. I'm not in there signing checks or anything of that nature.
Do you sign off on the financials?
We do approve the financials as a finance committee, and the 990, the tax information form. Return as part of the finance committee. And then a big part of my job is to report to the full board on the financial health of the organization and helping with calls to action to governance on what we need to do to be good stewards, number one, and also to ensure the financial stability of the organization. So sure. it's more of an oversight role, but also a communication role as well. It's very important.
Sure, sure. Well, I hate to say this, but we are coming to the end of our show, and we've had a very significant focus on nonprofits and certainly the PADV. Before we wrap up, I would like to say a big thank you to PADV for the work that they do in the community and the people that they support, primarily women. Mm. And as we've said earlier, half of the customer base is children. If anybody listening to the radio show would like to either donate or get involved from a volunteer perspective, their organization is PADV.org. Well, that being said, we have a tradition on the show to ask all of our guests, what is your CFO tip of the month? What is yours?
Well, as you know, I'm not a pure CFO, but coming from my audit partner role, one thing I've found that's helpful is to listen a lot and listen to all sides. I'm a big fan of 360-degree feedback and 360-degree communication, so you learn so much from the people that report to you if you'll solicit that feedback about, number one, my performance, but the performance of, our processes. We've learned a lot from our 3, 4, 5-year auditors who are, our youngest employees, but really are on the ground and do most of the work, right? So if you listen to that group, no matter what your organization is, that are where the rubber meets the road, they've got good ideas about process, operations, how you communicate with them, how they can communicate with you. That will do nothing but add value.
That is a great tip. Well, from a formal perspective, I'd like to thank you, Keith Sherbert, for being our guest today, for sharing your innermost thoughts on the role of the CFO in the nonprofit world. Thanks, Keith.
Thank you.
Well, thanks also to our contributor for the news article, nonprofitfinancefund.org. And thanks go to our sponsors, Delaney Consulting, providing CFOs and controllers to Fortune 1000 companies and small businesses. And since we're on the topic, nonprofits alike, for more information about Delaney, go to DelaneyLLC.com. Thanks also to National Association of Corporate Directors, advancing exemplary board leadership for directors and by directors. Their website is nacdonline.org. Well, this and other thought leadership from today's CFO is available right from your computer at cforadio.com. If you are a CFO or know of one that would like to be a guest on the show, please contact us via the web, and you can send us an email to info@cforadio.com. Thanks for listening to CFO Radio. This is Lorraine Chilvers signing off. Until next time.